Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and we tend to honor those who came before us, don't we? And the important learning we can get from those folks, our parents and grandparents, teachers. Wisdom can often come down the line from people like that to people like us. But sometimes important learning can come up the line, too, from people younger than us, learning from our youngers as much as from our elders. Kevin Kling knows that and has a story to tell us all about it. The story is called Lessons from Three Girls, and it was recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Kevin.
Thanks, you guys. All right. This is a story that's near and dear to my heart because it's about mentors, people that have mentored me. And mostly we think of elders, people, and they generally are the ones that mentor us. My uncles, I always used to say, a good uncle teaches you what not to do by doing it first. Like my uncle Byron taught me, if you're a guy and you're over 50, don't get a perm. Just don't do that. My Uncle Bob used to always say, you know, in my day, you could go to the grocery store, come back with eggs, milk, bread, and a little something for yourself with a dollar. Can't do that anymore. Now they have surveillance cameras. That's the uncle they say I take after. So my uncles would always teach me these different things, and I thought, okay, it's the elders, it's the people that came before us. But you know what? I've learned more from kids, I think, as my, if you will, elders than I have from adults. And I have three examples that I'd like to share with you, three girls that taught me so much about life. All three of these girls were under 10 years old. The first was my niece, Michaela. And Michaela, we went to her concert. She was really little at the time. She was 4 years old. She was playing one of those little Suzuki violins, you know, those tiny violins. Have you ever heard of the little, they're about a quarter of the size. And so she was up there with five other girls and they were playing their Suzuki violins. They were playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Well, they just started into it when the bow of Michaela's bow of her violin got caught in the girl's hair next to her. And so it was stuck in the girl's ponytail. But Michaela didn't stop playing. She muscled through the entire song. And the little girl's head was whipping back and forth. And afterwards, everyone said Michaela had what it took to be a professional musician. And that's lesson number one. Lesson number one, perseverance. Hang in there through tough times. And keep playing. Keep playing in hard times. That was Michaela's lesson to me. The second girl, remember, there's something that I tell kids when they come in. After a show, you can't high five, but we can high four all day because my left arm, I have four fingers. So when I work with kids, a lot of times I'll say, what makes us different is what gives us power. What makes us the same keeps us safe and gives us resiliency when the world comes at us. But when you want to know your power, when you want to know what you're going to contribute to the world, it usually springs from what makes you different. That's where your power comes from. And to prove it, I'll sit with kids and I'll say, okay, make a superhero character out of what makes you different. And so we'll go around the room and we'll make a superhero character out of what makes us different. And we'll pick the villain. Who's on the other side of that? What, you know, because a hero is only as good as the villain they vanquish. So you got to make that villain really good, really hard to beat. So we go around the room and I'm going around and I get to this one girl and I go, what's your superpower? And she goes, I'm really, really shy. And I said, I know you haven't said anything in 2 weeks, but why is that a superpower? And she said, because sometimes people forget I'm in the room and I'm invisible and I know everything. And she did. She knew everything about every kid in that class. I could ask her about anybody. She knew because she was quiet to invisibility. She even knew about all the teachers. She knew some things she really shouldn't have known. And sometimes I'd be talking to a teacher and, oh, there she'd be. Where'd you come from? How'd you get there? So I thought, I want to learn. I want to listen to the point of invisibility. And I just started when I was already rewarded. Almost my first trip on a bus after that, I thought, okay, I'm going to listen to this bus to invisibility. And sure enough, the guys behind me start talking. And one says, guess how old I am? And the other guy goes, don't you know? And the first guy goes, yeah, I know. And the second guy goes, well, then go with that. So I was already rewarded. But listening to the point of invisibility, listening to that point of empathy is the second thing I've learned, listening. And every good storyteller that you've ever heard is, I guarantee, a really good listener. So that's two. But now we get to three. And this is when I learned love, you never know when love is going to come from. You never know when it's going to appear. And I heard this story from a friend of mine from the South Sudan, over in Africa. And they were in a refugee camp, and things were really hard, and they were really short on money. And his wife and his young daughter went to the market, and they were shopping in the market. And the girl had been so good the last few weeks that his wife said, you know, let's buy you an apple, which was a huge thing at this time. So they went to the apple stand, and she said, you can have any apple you want. And the little girl took an apple, and she took a bite out of it. And then she quickly grabbed another apple and took a bite out of that. And her mom went, oh, I thought we raised her better than that. And her heart was broken, and she saw her daughter, and all of a sudden her daughter reaches out her hand with one of the apples and says, here, mommy, this one's the sweetest. So you never know where love's going to appear, and you never know how, and sometimes you have to wait for it, and it will be there. And so those were three of the things that I've learned from young girls. I want to throw in an extra credit one, though. And this is from a guy, and this is a totally what knuckleheads we are. I'm in the elevator, and I'm in the elevator in the hospital because I've just, I've had this motorcycle accident. I try to go outside, and I try to walk a half block. That's all the further I could walk. And so I'm in the elevator, and this 8-year-old kid gets on, and he goes, I hit my head on a fence post. That's why he was in the hospital. He goes, I hit my head on a fence post, and I had to get 8 stitches here. He points to the back of his head. I go, oh, yeah? I had to get stitches from here to here, ear to ear, down my arm, and down one leg to the floor. And the kid looks at me and says, yeah, but mine really hurt. So from that kid, I learned you can never judge another man's pain. So those are 4 quick lessons from kids this day and age. Thank you.
That was Kevin Kling with his story, Lessons from 3 Girls. Now, listening to this story reminds me of some of the important things I've learned in my life and the people from whom I learned them. I have a wise aunt, my mom's little sister, Auntie Annie, we call her. She was born long after my mother, and she was only 9 or so when I was born myself. So Auntie Annie was, when I was a kid, more like a much older sister than a member of the generation before me. Anyway, Auntie Annie has taught me a bunch of great life lessons. For example, she has a formula for choosing the right size Tupperware container for leftovers. Now, you look at the amount of leftovers you have, and you imagine the smallest container into which you think those leftovers will fit, and then you choose the container just smaller than that. That's Annie's formula. And it doesn't work 100% of the time, but it works a lot more often than you'd think. But that's not the end of Annie's wisdom. She has this formula for how long stuff will take. Home repairs, big school projects, that novel you're writing, anything you think will take some time, and you're trying to figure out how much time it'll take. And here's the formula. Think of how long you think the thing will take, then double it, then move it to the next time increment. So, like, if you think a home repair is going to take 2 days, it'll really take 4 weeks. And if you think that novel you're writing will take 3 months, it might just take 6 years. Now, Annie cites that formula as kind of a joke, but it's shocking and alarming to see just how often it's more or less correct. And there's more. The night before I got married, Auntie Annie called me and said, "Remember, Sam, getting married is a little like preparing for a rafting trip. It's going to be an incredible adventure, but you've only got so much room in the raft, not nearly enough room for everything of yours and not nearly enough room for everything of hers, but room for all the important things and some other things besides. And you get to plan for that trip together. And then you get to take that trip together." Well, that was my Auntie Annie's advice. And I loved it. And I've gone back to it again and again. And that's where Kevin's story, Lessons from Three Girls, took me. Where did they take you? And who will you take along?
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the apple seed.
Are you turned off by the news because of how angry and depressing it can be, but still want to engage with important issues? I know that describes me. And I want to introduce you to Top of Mind, another podcast from the BYU Radio family of shows. Each week, the Top of Mind team and award-winning host Julie Rose take one tough, important topic, and they dive deep. The goal is learning to stay open and curious when confronted with perspectives that challenge us. Best of all, every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what matters to you. Top of Mind. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to the Top of Mind podcast from BYU Radio.
Some more. Okay, I'll proceed with my story inspired by the apple seed.
It's such a pleasure to be with you today on the Appleseed Podcast. Next up in an episode about learning lessons, West Virginia tall tale teller Bill Lepp has a story for us called Wrong Lesson. It's a reminder that as important as it is to find good teachers, it's also important to draw good conclusions from what those teachers tell us. Let's see what Bill and Skeeter learn. Here's Bill, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
So my best friend in the whole wide world is a guy named Skeeter. And Skeeter had an uncle named Uncle Harsh. And Uncle Harsh was Skeeter's mom's brother. He'd never been married. He was a professor. And somewhere along the way in his academic studies, he learned, this is going to blow your minds, that you can teach people lessons through storytelling. So he thought to himself, I'm going to learn some stories, and I'm going to find some people to tell these stories to. Well, the people who he found were myself and Skeeter, who at this time, when this started, we were about 5 years old. But Uncle Harsh, he would tell us the story, but he would never tell us the moral of the story. He would just finish the story, and then he would say, now dwell on that, and maybe you'll learn something. Well, he was either a bad storyteller or we were bad dwellers. Because anything we ever learned, I believe, was the wrong lesson. For example, the first time I remember Uncle Harsh telling us a story, he told us the story of Little Red Riding Hood. Now, I'm not going to tell you that because I think you probably already know it. But the reason Uncle Harsh told us that story is because for the first time in our lives, Skeet and I were going to get to walk from his parents' house to his grandmother's house, all by ourselves, no adults there. Now, you have to understand, we lived in a little tiny town called Half Dollar, West Virginia. We had two streets in Half Dollar. One was called Main Street. The other one was called, nah, that ain't Main Street. So nowhere in that entire distance from Skeeter's house to his grandmother's house were we ever going to be unobserved by someone who knew us. But we didn't realize that. We just knew that for the first third of that distance, Skeeter's parents could see us. And for the last third of that distance, Skeeter's grandmother could see us. But in that middle third, no one could see us. It was the first time we were ever going to be free of adult supervision. And so Uncle Harsh sent us off. And as soon as we got into that middle third where no one that we knew thought we knew could see us, Skeeter turned left away from his grandmother's house. And I said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "Well, I dwelt on it. And we sure ain't going to my grandmother's house." And I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Because if we go to her house, she's going to get eaten by a wolf." And I thought, yeah, that's true. So instead, we went to Schaefer's and we bought some candy. And then we went down to Skidder Creek and we caught crawdads and salamanders. And then we went and watched the volunteer fire department wash the fire truck. And then we went to our buddy Wally's house and we watched TV until it was supper time. And we went back to Skeeter's house. At which point, we found out that we had been lost all day. All of Skeeter's family was at his house. His grandmother was there. Uncle Harsh was there. My entire family was there. The sheriff was there. And half the fire department was there. And when they asked us, "Why didn't you go to your grandma's house?" Skeeter said, "Because Uncle Harsh told us that story, and I thought that if we went to grandma's, grandma was going to get eaten by a wolf." And Skeeter's grandmother thought that that was so funny and so hilarious that we didn't get in any trouble at all. So we learned a whole new lesson. And then Uncle Harsh told us, he would tell us ones that, well, let me just lay it down for you. This is a Jack story. Now, at this time, you've heard of Jack. Jack has been Jack in the Beanstalk, Lazy Jack. If you've been around any storytelling, you've heard of Jack. In this particular story, Jack isn't quite as nice as he normally is. In fact, Jack is kind of a, well, he spends a lot of time in bars doing things he shouldn't be doing. And in this particular story, he's in this bar, and the devil shows up. And the devil says, "Jack, I'm taking you with me. It's time for you to go. I'm taking your soul down with me." And Jack says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, I understand. I haven't been the greatest guy in the world, but let me get one more drink." And so the devil says, "Okay." They get one more drink. Comes time to pay. Jack doesn't have any money. So he says to the devil, "You're magic, right?" The devil says, "Yeah." Jack says, "You can do anything you want to do, right?" Devil says, "Yeah." Jack says, "Well, turn yourself into a gold coin, and then I will give you to the bartender to pay for this drink, and once the bartender puts you in the cash register, I'll leave. You can turn back into the devil." Devil says, "That's a great idea, because apparently the devil hasn't been paying attention for most of eternity." Turns himself into a coin. Jack takes the coin, puts it in his pocket, and leaves the bar. And the devil can't get out because Jack has a silver cross in his pocket and the coin is against the cross. Devil is helpless. Yeah. So finally, the devil gets tired of being in Jack's pocket and he says, "Jack, let me out of here." And Jack says, "All right, I'll let you out. But you got to promise you're not coming back for my soul for 10 years. Devil says, "It's a deal." And so Jack lets him out. 10 years later, to the minute, the devil is back. He says, "Jack, it's time to come with me." And Jack says, "All right, that's fine. That's fine. I haven't lived the best life. I understand. I haven't done anything in the past 10 years to correct it, apparently, either." He said, "But I'm a little bit hungry, and there's an apple at the top of this apple tree. If you, sir, please the devil, will climb that apple tree and get me that apple, I'll be ready to go." And the devil, who apparently also has learned nothing in the last 10 years, climbs the tree. And while he's in the tree, Jack cuts a cross in the trunk of the tree, and the devil can't get down past the cross. Jack leaves him up there. A couple of days, finally, the devil's like, "Come on, Jack, I got stuff to do. You got to let me down." Jack says, "Fine, I'll let you down, but you have to promise that you'll just never, ever come for my soul again." Devil says, "Whatever, I don't even want your soul anymore." So the devil goes, but eventually Jack does die, and when he dies, his soul goes to heaven, and St. Peter's like, no, just get. So Jack's like, "All right," so he goes down to where the devil spends most of his time, and the devil's like, "No, I told you, I don't want you. You're just going to have to go back and roam the earth forever." So Jack says, "All right, I'll go back, but it's a long, dark trip. Can I have a light?" And so the devil gives Jack a piece of burning coal from the fires. And Jack, it's hot. So Jack's like, "Wow, that's hot." And so he reaches in his pocket where not only Does he keep a silver cross at all times? But he also has a turnip. I don't know. This is folklore. People write these things. Maybe it meant something back then. People carried turnips in their pockets. So Jack hollows out the turnip, puts the burning coal in it, goes back up to the earthly realm, and he's been wandering the earthly realm ever since. And Uncle Harsh told us he only shows himself on Hallow's Eve with the turnip with the glowing coal in it, which is where we get the jack-o'-lantern, right. And then Uncle Harsh told us to dwell on that. Well, we dwelled on it. And for about 2 weeks, we carried silver crosses and turnips in our pockets, but nothing ever came from it. And then finally, Uncle Harsh told us the story where Jack, now Jack, usually Jack and his mama, they're hungry. They're always hungry. And then the story starts out, they're hungry, and sometimes there's Will and Tom, and so mama will send out Will, try and do something, and he'll fail, and then she sends out Tom, and he fails, and then she sends out Jack. And Jack, usually through, just mostly just by being stubborn, and by listening to the little gray person beside the street with whom Jack shares half of his food. Always remember that. Share half your food with the little gray person by the side of the street. Things will work out for you. But Jack does that. Usually then he meets the princess or the sheriff's daughter, gets the fortune, and gets married. And then, by the beginning of the next story, Jack and his mama are poor, and he's single again. So some people think that Jack stories are interesting, but I want to know what happens in between every Jack story. So in this particular story, he and his mama are poor, and it's Christmas, and Jack gets a shotgun for Christmas. But they're so poor, he only gets one shell. And so his mama says, go get us something to eat. And he goes out in the woods, and sure enough, he sees a rabbit standing right beside a boulder. And so Jack takes aim on that rabbit, and he's just about to pull the trigger when he sees another rabbit on the other side of the boulder. And Jack can't figure out which one of those rabbits he's going to shoot. And then he sees a squirrel on top of the boulder. So now he's like, which one do I? And then he gets a good idea. And he just shoots the boulder right in the middle. And the boulder cracks in half. This half kills this rabbit. This half kills this rabbit. And then the squirrel falls to its death. Because you see that happen all the time, don't you? A squirrel falls like 10 feet and is just dead. But more than that, the blast of the shotgun knocked Jack into the creek, and it took him half an hour to get out because his overalls filled up with so many fish that when he got out of the water and the pressure changed, the button in the middle of his overalls shot off and killed a 12-point buck. Had been scared by all this ruckus. The buck was running through the woods. The button hit the buck, killed it dead. The buck crashed into the ground. One of his antlers broke, and a piece of the antler flew off and hit a 1,200-pound wild boar. And Uncle Harsh said, now dwell on that. And we dwelled on it. And no matter how hard we tried, we just couldn't stuff enough fish into Skeeter's overalls to get a button to pop off. So finally, what we did was we went into his garage. Now, Skeeter's mom was an avid garage sailor. Now, this is something that makes more sense if you're reading it, because I don't mean she sailed around in people's garages. I meant she would get up on Saturday morning and go to every single garage sale in the neighborhood or in the county. And if you've ever had an avid garage sailor in your family, you know. In our family, you probably know this saying that if there were an infinite number of monkeys with an infinite number of typewriters and an infinite amount of paper, eventually one of them would type the entire works of Shakespeare. In our family, we believe a lot, but we don't believe that. What we do believe is that if you had an infinite number of monkeys with an infinite number of cameras, that eventually one of them would take a picture of the Mona Lisa. So anyway, if you have that is a belief in our family. If you have an avid garage sailor in your family, you know that eventually you will own one of everything, which is why in Dry County, West Virginia, where we lived, Skeeter had a wetsuit in his garage. So we went in the garage, he put on the wetsuit, I took duct tape, and I wrapped it around his wrists and his ankles. We sewed a button right here. And then his dad was a volunteer fireman, so he had a length of fire hose in the back of his truck and a fire hydrant wrench. And we went down the street about 100 yards to the fire hydrant, and Skeeter was standing there, and I took the fire hose, I connected it to the hydrant, didn't turn it on yet, and then I took the end of the fire hose, the business end, as they say, and I just stuck the nozzle down the wetsuit, and then I turned the fire hydrant on. Now, there are some adults in this room, and some of you probably consider yourself competent, or at least conscientious. And if you were driving down the road and you saw two kids standing by a fire hydrant, and one had on a wetsuit with a fire hose stuck down the back, and the other was messing with it, you might be compelled to say to yourself, I should stop and intervene in this situation. But I'm telling you, don't. Do not. I know from experience that those kind of kids only learn through experience. Just let them do it or they're not going to know. So I turned the fire hydrant on all the way and the wetsuit just went whoosh, like that and it exploded. And then Skeeter was standing there in nothing but duct tape and the wrists and the ankles of the wetsuit. But the button shot off and it didn't kill a buck, but it did hit a Buick, which is only one letter different. And we went home, and Uncle Harsh told us the story of the Emperor's new clothes. And he didn't even have to tell us to dwell on it.
That was Bill Lepp with Wrong Lessons. Now, did you ever learn something big from someone small or from your own experiences? Who have some of your favorite teachers been over the years? And did you sometimes learn a wrong lesson even from a good teacher? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can message us through our social media channels or email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Now, speaking of lessons, I want to let you know about our Appleseed lesson plans, all based on the stories you love from our podcast. The lesson plans cover topics in literacy and social studies, values and social skills. The lessons are designed for classroom teachers, homeschoolers, and everyday families. And you can check them out on our webpage, byuradio.org/theappleseed, under the For Educators tab. And we want to thank Kevin Kling and Bill Lepp for their stories today. You've listened to their tales, and now it's time to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.